Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
And we are back. Thank you so much for joining us. And little caveat, gonna throw it out there. Now, hopefully you won't notice, but this is a little bit of a switch up for a format. I'm up here on a Friday morning, and most of you know we record the show on Friday. So whatever happens in the market today, unfortunately, we won't be able to address. And usually that's the case because I'm always up here on Friday. But I'm up here way earlier on Friday to support a good cause. My main man, my producer, Jerry, has got a charitable golf tournament. And I think if you've listened to the show before, you realize that, you know, golf is a priority. It has to be. And especially when it's charitable golf. I mean, that's just, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like babies and sugar cookies, right? I mean, everybody likes them. You have to. It's like good on good. It's morality squared, if you will. So anyway, we're up here a little bit early. I've never recorded the show this early. So hopefully we'll bring it. And we're not, you know, we're not a little bit slow on the pitch. We got a lot to talk about. Tons. There's a couple things going on out in the world today. There's a couple things going on out in the world today. But kind of the theme of today's show, and don't sue me if we don't stick right to it, because what happens, right? But the theme of the show today is going to be morality in finance. Is there a connection, right? Can we see bad financial choices being made or profligate spending or money printing and quantitative easing? All of these things that as rational human beings, especially rational adults, doesn't seem like there's quite as many of us out there. And you notice how I said us? I'm including myself in that group of rational adults. My wife may disagree at times. There's a lack of rational thinking, rational adults. And what we want to look at, is there a connection between all of this profligate spending and this QE and all of this stuff? Is there a connection to that kind of moral decay or that decadence that we see in society? And not to blow it, but obviously, and maybe it's not obvious, but I am firmly in the camp of yes. I'm firmly in the camp of history would support that, and I believe present day would as well. And the other thing that we're going to talk about in relation to that is central bank activity. We're going to talk about what the next steps are, because one of the interesting things that we think about is that when we enter the next recession, that alone will put us in rarefied air in a place that we've never been before, because we've never entered a recession with record low interest rates. And so we've never entered a recession with 115% debt to GDP. And we've never entered a recession where the Fed can't slash rates to try to ease the hit. So we want to talk about what's next. And then along that vein, or along that thought or that construct, I want to address a jaw-dropping, and I had to scratch a couple things off the show because I was doing some late-night research, much to the chagrin, again, of my wife. I, you know, Whenever I talk about the wife, I always say, you know, with due deference, meaning that, of course, she's right. You know, it's not a complaint. It's more of a confession. So, but much to the chagrin of my wife, a lot of that research happens late at night and sometimes keeps her up as my screen is glowing in the darkness and things like that. I got a hard time turning it off, right? But I ran across a story last night that I had to scratch some stuff from the show because it was just too fitting. And let's put it this way. I don't want to give it away. We'll get to it later. But Seattle is not the only city in America that has absolutely lost its mind. Okay. I got another great story. As a matter of fact, my suspicion is at some point this story will become relevant in Seattle because I could see the Seattle City Council doing the exact same thing. So we want to address that. Now, first, as always, we got to talk about the market update, right? And some interesting things have gone on. There's a lot of good earnings reports coming out, which really support our thesis that, you know, this isn't just a blip, that the economy certainly is strong. It's certainly much stronger than it's been in the past. And I don't really see that abating anytime soon. That being said, there are some issues, obviously, right? We've talked about this a lot. And there are some things that we want to keep our eyes on. And obviously, valuations are always a concern. But we've kind of flipped places a little bit. There's some real issues outside of the United States that are starting to become apparent. And I think the one, if you're at home, obviously, if you're more of a surface, if you're not a finance nerd like I am, if you're not a finance nerd. Hey, and by the way, there are a lot of you out there. The more and more that I meet with people, and I think we've talked to 30 of you guys in the last week and a half, something like that. The more and more I talk to you guys, the more and more I find out that there are finance geeks out there. So we are not alone. Take heart. I was joking with one of our listeners, and I said, hey, finance geeks are the new cool kids, right? Anyway, in my dreams. But anyway, getting back to the market update, one of the fascinating things I saw this week, and this is actually on a positive note, and this is a little bit off our path of morality and finance, the theme of the week, but retail stocks, strong comeback. I was reading an analyst report last night that talked about how retail is not going the way of the dinosaur. Retail is making a comeback. Retail is responding. And I chuckled to myself because we started picking up different retail plays, mainly Costco, Men's Warehouse. We talked about that on the air before. We don't own it anymore. These are not recommendations. I don't know if these investments are suitable for you. Macy's was another one we picked up in the last 16 months. And I wanted to illustrate, if we want to talk about what value investing is, this is a classic example. Classic example. And the reason why I think it's such a great example of value investing is with value opportunities and value investing, there's always an intersection of truth and deception, or truth and non-truth, right? And the non-truth of the retail story was Amazon's taking over the entire world. Retail is going the way of the dinosaur. Don't touch retail. It's dead money. They're all going out of business. Everything's going online. And what is the element of truth built on that? Well, obviously, I think you guys know the way retail works, the way we shop, the way we interact with people that sell us goods, the way we look at those goods, it very much has changed. There's been a transformation for better or worse. I think there's good things and there's bad things about it, right? And that transformation caught retailers off balance. It caught a lot of them looking, right? It surprised them. But what did they do? The weaker among them, which is how capitalism and free markets work, the weaker among them had to restructure, go out of business, i.e. Toys R Us, right? And the stronger ones, with a little more foresight, have adapted. And let me just take kind of the steam out of this. That's the way it always works, right? That's why we have that saying at our firm, when something's down 90%, it doesn't mean we're going to buy it, but we're going to stop and take a look. Because ironically, that over-the-top negativity should send a bell off. You sit there and go, wait. What? A whole industry? You mean the company that does the Macy's Day Parade? Costco? Men's Warehouse, where they sell suits and men's shoes, which men aren't going to start buying online? You mean those are going out of business? And then we look at the financials of the companies and you go, wait a second. This company's very financially healthy. You're telling me it's going to go out of business? You're telling me it's not going to adapt? You're telling me it's not going to change the way it works and survive? And you're telling me right now that this stock is priced like the company's going out of business tomorrow and there's not an opportunity there? Now, Costco may not be the best example because Costco didn't get hit as hard. But when you're in a sector, remember, we got to think about, you know, it's not just what we call first order thoughts or first order recognitions. It's also second and third order, meaning we've got to look down the road. We've got to look a few dominoes down the chain, right? And Costco is a retailer. So if retail as a section is getting smoked, however good Costco looks in light of that, you know it's not, it's being knocked. One of the biggest reasons is with the ETFing of the entire world, meaning that most people don't go out and buy individual stocks. They go buy an ETF. They buy a retail ETF. I don't know this for sure, but I'd be willing to bet you 97% of retail ETFs out there have Costco stock. So if retail's getting smoked, people are selling their retail ETFs, which indiscriminately sells every stock in the sector. So we see opportunity there. And funny enough, over the last 6 to 8 months, I want to say, don't quote me exactly on that, but Costco, big old Costco, has been one of our best performers. It's also been one of our biggest positions. Same with Macy's. And I've told you the story before about Men's Warehouse. We bought it at probably about 13 and sold it, at some point in the last 3 or 4 months, I want to say, for around 28, 29. That was a 16-month period of time holding. Why did we sell it so fast? We're not typical traders, but we, for a variety of different reasons, I wasn't nuts about, still am not nuts about management. Some of the things they're doing, it's not perfect, but it was extraordinarily undervalued. Another company we did that with was GameStop, a video game company. The company was left for dead. We bought it at about $12.50. Today, I think the stock's trading at $17. We only bought it about 5 months ago, right? So what when we talk about value investing, it is not buying Nvidia. It is not buying Tesla. It is not buying Netflix. These are not value stories. The reason we like to go do these things or shop for these things or buy these types of stocks is, although it may sound counterintuitive, although it may sound sort of fatalistic, I want to buy things where all the positive sentiment has been sucked out of it, because that positive sentiment is what creates the fluff. And remember, we got to go back to what the definition of value is. Price is what we pay. Value is what we get. And that is the number one determining factor on how our investments perform. You've heard me say it on the show before. Warren Buffett talks about this all the time. There are no bad assets. There's just bad prices. And the reason we like these things is they're coiled springs to the upside, meaning when everything bad is priced into the stock, you only need something to go right. And a lot of times, you don't even need anything to go right. You just need it not to go horribly wrong. And so what's your downside to upside? What is your risk reward there? It's very skewed to the upside. Whereas if I look at a stock like a Netflix or an Nvidia or a Tesla, could those stocks double in the next 12 months? Yes. But they could also lose easily 50, 60, 70%. Now, if we buy a company like Macy's or Men's Warehouse or these companies that are literally trading at a fraction of their book value, everybody thinks they're going out of business. How much downside is left in that business, assuming it's fiscally healthy? Well, not much, right? Because at the end of the day, there's still positive cash flow. There's dividend payments. And that thing is only going to get beaten down so much until either the market changes the way they look at it, changes their perspective and starts buying it, or it gets taken out. It gets bought by a competitor because they sit there and they go, wait a second, you're telling me, and this is the way this setup happens, not all the time, but you're telling me everybody thinks this company's going out of business. It's got $300 million worth of free cash flow per year. And I can buy it at an $800 million market cap, which means I ROI or I get my return on investment in 2.5 years. It's like buying a stock that's yielding 30%. Right? And then they're sitting there going, well, yeah, you know, the sales might continue. This company may continue to deteriorate. But based on current numbers, I only need 3 years. And that's if everything holds steady. That's not even if we improve it. That's not even accounting for the fact that things get better. So it's a classic value scenario. And then all the analysts are coming out saying, retail isn't dead. And I just laughed when I saw that. And I went, no kidding. Right? What'd you guys think? That everything was going to be Amazon? So anyway, that's part of the market update. It's a little bit of an aside, but I just wanted to illustrate what is value investing. Value investing is buying retailers in the last 16 months. Not now. Not now. They're actually getting up to fair value, and we're actually looking at paring back some of those retail positions. And I think that some of these companies still have tough roads ahead of them. But that's a value situation. Right? That's what value is. Value is buying what nobody else likes and blocking out the emotion and just looking at the numbers, looking at the cold, hard facts. Because I will, again, going back to Warren Buffett, right? The market in the short term is a voting mechanism. In the long term, it's a weighing mechanism. Free cash flow wins out every time. It always will. It always will. So other stuff going on in the market. Again, not a lot of change. We continue to watch Tesla. Fascinating. Hopefully you guys are keeping an eye on that. If nothing else, just for the entertainment value. Absolutely fascinating what's going on there. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Gold continues to be under pressure. We talk a little bit later about why we own it. I want to illustrate that one more time and go over that as a refresher, because I think it's important to revisit these things when especially when they're not doing well. And oil continues to not really confirm. I think oil's showing some global weakness here. It's not really doing that well. It's just kind of counter to some of these inflationary signs we've been getting, but we continue to keep a close eye on that. Obviously we've got political storms. We'll talk about that a little bit later and how that could affect things. But if any of this stuff rings a bell with you, as it has with so many that we've talked to, and it seems like every month we're on here, we talk to more and more people every single month. And thanks again for those of you that called in. It's so great to get so many of you, meet so many of you, and have you become clients. But if any of this stuff rings a bell, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. And hopefully one of the things that we can convey in this show is that we look at things a little bit differently. This is not a static buy and hold portfolio where we just ride things out up and down. As I've said on the show before, if you want to do that, that's no problem. There are people that are successful with it. Just don't pay an advisor to do it. But if you want some second level thinking and a more strategic way to deploy your capital, which typically and hopefully does result in significantly better returns down the road, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. You can get our free booklet. You can talk to us, set up a phone consultation. We can compare. It usually takes 15, 20 minutes. Compare what you're doing in your own portfolio or with your advisor to how we've been doing, and we will show you absolutely how we can increase returns, increase your safety, and lower your costs, all of which we should be focused on as advisors, and provide another level of thinking and another level of security and safety into your portfolio. So anyway, we got to run. As always, I've gone a little bit over on this opening section, but stick with us, because the next thing I want to discuss on the show is what's next. What happens during the next downturn? What happens in the next recessionary cycle? Because we're at a place we've never been. So stick with us. It's got several good segments coming up. Hope you're having a great weekend. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Dory Monson with my financial advisor, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. And Zach, what I love about you guys is your focus on risk management.
Well, Dory, we're a fiduciary and a holistic retirement planning firm. Our goals are simple. Get our clients the highest returns with the least amount of risk and cost.
I know they're normally used for safety, but how risky are bonds right now?
If a significant portion of your retirement portfolio is in cash or bonds, that just doesn't work in this low interest rate environment on the verge of inflation. You need a bond replacement strategy.
I gotta tell you, you have to read it. Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn that bond replacement strategy, learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Did you know one of the biggest threats you face during retirement is the high cost of long-term care? Hi, this is Brian Ott with 525 Advisors and host of Long-Term Care Radio on Cairo every Saturday morning at 7. Now, the facts are clear on this. Nearly 3 out of 4 of you will end up in a long-term care situation during your retirement years. And the problem is, traditional medical insurance and government programs won't pay for this care when you need it, meaning you are at risk of burning through your savings or becoming a burden on your family members. If you would like to learn how you can protect yourself and the people you care about most from the high cost of long-term care, then I invite you to join me for one of our upcoming long-term care planning classes. These are free educational events where you can learn about new options, including plans that pay you back if you never use them. And I'll even give you a free copy of my book, A Guide to Long-Term Care Planning. Sign up today at 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com, or give us a call, 425-748-8188.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we're back. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for sticking with us. And if you're just joining us, the overarching theme or just the theme today that we're going to adhere to, but we might loosely adhere to it at times, but is morality and finance, the juncture of morality and finance. Does the deterioration on the financial side in terms of responsibility, in terms of bailouts, in terms of quantitative easing, does it have knock-on effects on the morality side of a society? And I would posit that very much it does. And one of the ways that I wanted to address this was, in finance, much like morality, and we actually talked about this a little bit on the show that aired last week, was that you can delay consequences. You can push them off until they're recognized at a later date or felt or confronted at a later date, but you don't get rid of them, right? The bill always comes due. And I think that's important as it relates to this next topic that we want to discuss, which is what's next for central banks? What's next for central banking? And we want to discuss that in light of the next downturn. Not if, right, but when. Because rest assured, regardless of who's president, we will have another recession. And by all historical measures, we are much closer to it than we are anything else, right? This is the longest bull market in U.S. history. Trees don't grow to the sky. Right now, if you turn on the media, especially CNBC or Business News or anything like that, it's, hey, I don't know if we'll ever have a recession again. I literally saw a journalist, a young journalist, obviously, and no knock on you younger folks out there. And when I say young, I guess I'd be considered young by most, but you know, I mean, people under the age of 30, people who haven't seen a recession before, people that haven't managed money during a recession before, people that have never managed money during a panic of any kind, right? And the crazy thing to think about is that if you haven't been managing money for 10 years, you've never seen a downturn. Think about that. Think about all the people that have come out of business school who are now portfolio managers, who are 32, 31, 33, 35, that have never managed money through a downturn. It'd be like starting your career in 1981. All you've seen is stocks go straight up. Will that have an impact on your thinking? Of course it does. Right, but we all, well, I shouldn't say we all. Most of us should know, as adults, the biggest driver of this unprecedented stock run has not been economic growth. Sure, it's been much stronger, comparatively speaking, in the last 2 years. But, you know, keep that in light of the fact that we had the slowest economic advance post-recession in U.S. history, including the Great Depression. We had 10 years of the slowest growth on history in history, including the Great Depression. Now, I've had clients come back to me and say, well, Zach, I went and looked that up, and over the last 10 years, we've averaged 1.6, 1.7% annualized growth. And during the Great Depression, it was 1.4. Maybe it was 1.35, 1.4, somewhere around there. And I look at them and I go, okay, but you're talking about nominal economic growth. Well, what do you mean? Nominal economic growth is economic growth minus inflation, right? We can't count inflation because if I go buy a loaf of bread today for $5 and 2 years from now, that same loaf of bread is $7, that shows up in GDP. That extra $2 is a boost to GDP because that was a transaction that occurred, right? And so we have $7 of a transaction as opposed to $5. But the value exchanged is exactly the same. So we've got to factor into it inflation. And the big difference between the last 10 years and the Great Depression, in the Great Depression, there wasn't any inflation. There was deflation. And yet there was positive growth. So you can make the argument, and actually empirically it's true, that as a consumer, now I'm not talking about employment, right? But I'm talking about as a consumer and purchasing power of your dollars, you actually did better during the Great Depression than you have over the last 10 years. And that's just numbers. Because during the Great Depression, there was no inflation. There was deflation. And we still had 1.3, 1.4% economic growth over those 10 years. You know, from 1930 to 1940. Over the last 10 years, especially if we X out the last 16, 18 months, we'd averaged 1.6, 1.7% growth. And we were averaging almost the exact same in inflation. So inflation was the growth, which is a net zero, right? So we've got to put these things in context and go, first of all, we got to look at the construct that we're living in, and we got to realize that things have been good now for a long time, at least on the asset management side of it. And I guarantee you that that's going to show up. Right, that always makes me nervous, and I think it explains a lot of what's going on. I think people have total faith in the Fed. But when that next downturn comes, when it occurs, not if, what are central banks going to do? And the reason I bring this up, and I teased this earlier in the show, for those of you that don't know, we just had this big talk about economics, right? And we were relating the Great Depression and current days. Now, we talked about the difference with inflation and the difference in growth and consumers, but the biggest difference, I think the most stark difference that most of us see, is even though we grew better and things were better as a consumer over the last 10 years, asset prices during the Great Depression didn't go to all-time highs, right, like they are today. And why are they like that today? What made up the difference? Well, central banks printing $22 trillion of fiat currency and shoving them into the economy is something new. Something the world's never done before, and probably for good reason. And obviously, again, as adults, we know that there will be consequences. And one of the biggest consequences to that, and everybody goes, Zach, you know, one of the questions I get all the time is, what stops the music? What will keep these people from inevitably doing it? And I don't know the answer to that question. But I do know proof, empirical proof, of that it won't be the same this time because there's been major things that have changed. And one of the biggest things we look at is interest rates. Every single economic bump in the road we've endured over the last 30 years has been countered with a lowering of borrowing costs, helping people spur on, you know, consumption. Right? Because we're going to lower the borrowing costs, we're going to make goods cheaper. And we've talked a lot about this on the show before, but we've never attacked it from this angle. So stay with me here. So We already know that that same course of action, although it may be deployed in the next recession, won't be nearly as effective. And the reason we know it won't be nearly as effective is because rates are already so low. Right? Going into the last recession in 2008, 2009, I believe the Fed funds rate was at 2.5% to 3%, and that was already pretty low. They'd already done a lot of cutting back in 2002, 2003, 2004, mainly in response to 9/11. So we had less room to cut. Could that have been a reason why the recession was so profoundly bad? Sure. There was way less pad. And the way you can think about that is, let's say the Fed funds rate is at 6 or 6.5, which is the long-term average, incidentally. And we go into a recession. Now, all of a sudden, you drop 650 basis points or 6.5% off borrowing costs. You're darn right that's going to be stimulative to an economy. Where are we at today? Fed funds rates between 1.75 and 1.9. Now, they're talking about raising again in September. I think they probably will. Wouldn't be shocked if they didn't. But when the Fed goes to cuts rates going into the next recession, it doesn't have nearly as much pad. The other thing to consider is it doesn't have nearly as much flexibility on the balance sheet of the Fed. Going into the last recession, the Federal Reserve had $750 to $800 billion worth of assets. Today, they're around $4.2, $4.3 trillion of assets. So what is the reaction from central banks going to be? Well, one of the questions I get a lot, again, is, well, Zach, you say all the time that interest rates have bottomed, you can't go lower than zero, but what if they go negative? What if we go to negative interest rates, which is an abomination, and that's a, we could run a complete show on that alone. And that's a good question. Why? Because the Bank of Japan, the BOJ, went negative. It was about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, three or four. The Swiss National Bank went negative. And the Eurozone, for a short period of time, went negative. Everybody believes in the ultimate power of central banks. And they're like, you know, like the Great Oz, right? These are the guys behind the curtains. They're the magic people, as one of them was quoted as saying a few years back. The problem, the interesting thing, and proof to what I was saying earlier about how we don't get rid of bad things. We can't get rid of bad consequences, that the bill always comes due. And these central banks are academics. They think linearly, not dynamically. And they go, well, if we lower rates to zero and that stimulates the economy, then taking them negative would stimulate them more. No, you know what's interesting? What we found in Japan and in Sweden, Swiss National Bank, and also in the Eurozone, no, market didn't react the way they thought they would. They discounted, big surprise, they discounted the knock-on effects of this move. And interestingly enough, you know what the knock-on effects to negative interest rates were? Higher cost loans. Huh? What? What do you mean? Negative interest rates. How could the loans cost more? Because all of these big banks keep reserves on hand at their banks, right? Banks in America keep reserves on hand at the Federal Reserve. Same with banks of Japanese banks, with the Bank of Japan. Same with European banks and the European Central Bank. They keep reserves, and the Federal Reserve or that bank, that central bank, pays interest on those reserves. Well, if they go negative, that means that they start charging those banks money. Right. And theoretically, that should incentivize the bank to deploy more of their capital. But you know what the banks did was they raised the cost on all of their other loans that they issued to compensate for the money they were being charged by the central banks. So the rates went in negative, but the cost of loans and the cost of finance and the cost of capital all increased. Now, this shouldn't surprise you. Right? Financial engineering will only get us so far. And if we sit there and acknowledge that the record high asset prices that we're enjoying today are almost wholly a function of historically cheap money and historically cheap capital and printed money and profligate spending, if we acknowledge that, which I think it's pretty hard not to, in light of that growth and GDP story we just talked about, that should all concern us, because what it tells us is that going into the next recession, the bailouts and all of these things that saved our bacon in the great financial crisis or collapse or however you want to refer to it, Those things are already exhausted. The central banks have a very limited toolbox going forward. And it's just math. It's just empirical, you know, proof. It's just data. And so that's something to really keep an eye on. And it's also, watch this tie-in here. See, I'm getting a little more savvy at this game, Jerry. Which is why we talk about risk management all the time. This is not grandma's market. This is not grandma's economy. All the rules, all the things around you have changed, whether you want to acknowledge it or not. The portfolio that your dad retired on in 1993 and has paid for his place down in Palm Springs, it's not going to work for you for a variety of different reasons. And what we see is all too common is people being blind to this fact. Still see the 60-40 portfolio all the time, 60% stocks, 40% bonds. So if you're listening to this and you recognize that we need to think about things differently, we need to manage risk, we need to protect against the downside, we need to lower costs, cost being one of the biggest drags on performance, and we also need to generate better returns in order to finance our lifestyle going forward in light of the fact that inflation is inevitable. It's starting to happen right in front of our eyes. The only way to combat inflation is to make more money. If you acknowledge that, if you can see that, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show, knowyourriskradio.com. Sign up for our free newsletter. Get our booklet. Call us for a phone consultation or a meeting. And we will show you. No trick, no, you know, sleight of hand, no arm twisting. We don't do that. We just sit there and go, hey, here's how we do things. Look at the performance over the last 10 years. How did we generate positive returns during 2008, 2009? Here's how we did it. Here's how we can lower your cost. Just numbers, folks. Just facts. So anyway, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show, knowyourriskradio.com. It's got a link to Bulwark Capital. We got to run, as I always say this, but I've gone over again. Stick with us. We got some more great segments coming up. Got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Do better in bull markets. Do better in bear markets. Pay less fees in all markets. You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management. You can subscribe to Zach's free newsletter, The Bulwark Insider Report, at knowyourriskradio.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
Well, here we go. We are back at it. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for sticking with us. And if you are just joining us, what we're talking about today, we're trying to address different issues of the collision of morality and finance. Does one influence the other? As spending and profligacy become more apparent or more widespread in societies, do we see a moral decline at the same time? And are the two interlinked? And as I said earlier, I would say yes. And I think that the evidence really weighs heavy to the side of yes, that is in fact the case. And we've seen it in history. We've seen it after the Gilded Age. We've seen it in Rome. you know, the Gilded Age, you know, coming before or predating the French Revolution. And we saw the opulence there and the profligate spending and the deficit spending. And you go back to Roman times. Anyway, you see all these different examples of it. Is that happening today? Well, all the parents out there could agree with me. And those who have lived a little bit, and maybe those wise younger people among us, is that the problem with making bad decisions or amoral decisions is that typically one begets the other. It's sort of like lying, right? We lie once. I explain this to my kids all the time. It's number one rule in our house, honesty. And what I explain to them is that one lie begets another. One sin begets another sin. Not to be a religious radio show, but I think that's probably an idea that we can all wrap our heads around. And the funny thing with finance that I've noticed in my career that is one of the things that fascinates me with investing in finance is that the world of money and the world of investing and the world of business and finance really closely mirrors the world of morality, the world of right and wrong. And what I mean by that is we see the same thing go on in finance. The more profligate the spending, the more irresponsible the spending, the bigger the deficits, it doesn't tend to lead to responsibility. It tends to lead to more of those types of decisions. And why? Because when bad decisions or immoral decisions don't have consequences, or the natural consequences of those bad decisions are muted, then the coast is clear. When the cat's away, the mice will play. And to me, it really underscores, you know, one of the biggest fallacies and one of the biggest errors or one of the biggest chinks in the armor of the approach that central banks have taken. Right? We're going to clean up Wall Street. We're going to do all this. We're going to do that right after you bailed them out. Right? Which is, you know, when you go in and you bail these things out, and again, this has been a topic that we've discussed before. But it creates what we refer to as moral hazard. And if we remove or we mute or we dampen the effects of bad decisions, then we are inherently ensuring that those bad decisions and most likely worse decisions will be made down the road. One of the simple reasons for that is that the people that made the bad decisions are still there. And it's just simple. If you're an idiot and you've made really poor decisions and you're allowed to stay in the game, you're the odds on favorite to screw up again. Score the odds on favorite. That's who I'm putting my money on. So that, you know, that's a basic relation in that whole idea. You know, the more of X that you do, it doesn't change that equation. The outcome stays the same. And as a matter of fact, the outcome grows, right? We can see it in math. We can see it in finance. And to go right along with this, we discussed this in the opening segment of the show, but last night I was just doing some research and I stumbled across an article in the Wall Street Journal that literally dropped my jaw, that literally stopped me from what I was doing. And I had to tell my wife about it. Now, I don't think she cared as much as I did. You know, she's not a finance geek, but Chicago, a fascinating read. Don't just take it from me. Go, if you've got the Wall Street Journal, you know, maybe sign up for a free trial or whatever. I don't know if they have that, but if you have the Wall Street Journal, go look for this article because it's just fascinating. But anyway, we all know, if you're listening to this radio show, I think we all know what a train wreck Chicago is. Shocker. You know, you run a country or you run a city like that for 80 years by the same political party with no opposition in force. And you're going to end up with a mess on your hands, right? It's like a miniature Cuba. It's a disaster. And here goes that tie into morality and finance again, right? We're seeing some of the highest murder rates, crime rates, everything in Chicago. Oh, shocker. Surprise, surprise. Their fiscal house is in absolute disarray, right? There goes that tie again. It's just like in normal life, right? If you see a neighbor's yard that's got stuff all over it, house is a mess, you know, shingles falling off the roof side, chances are their finances are probably a mess too. Like my mother used to say all the time, you don't have to be rich to clean your clothes and take a bath, right? And the same is true in every other aspect of life. But so Chicago, one of the ways that Chicago was pinched, now they've got budgetary, they're paying way too much to unions. They don't negotiate because they're liberals and they love everybody. And they're more compassionate and wise than the rest of us because they don't believe in balance sheets, numbers, you know, they don't believe in that. Feelings. That's what'll get us there. But Chicago's a mess for a variety of different reasons. One of the biggest issues they've got, though, is a giant hole in the middle of their pension structure. Right? They've made all these promises to people. And at last count, I want to say their pension, again, don't quote me, but I'm going to underscore it. I think it's larger than this, but I think their pension shortfall is like 40%. So they own 40 to 50% more than they currently have. And more, you know, we extrapolate out the amounts that are coming in to fund the pension versus obligations that they're set to pay over the next 10 to 20 years. And that shortfall is 40%, which is massive, 40 to 50, maybe as high as 60, but don't quote me. So now, so they got to figure out a fix, right? Because they can't undo this, right? They can't not pay the pensions. That would be so unliberal, right? So unkind. So what are they going to do? Now, they haven't signed up for it, but the leading solution, and I say that word, I underscore that word because in jest, because it's not a solution, obviously. But their solution of the day is to issue another $10 billion of debt and invest that money. Because the logic behind it is the economy's so strong and stock prices are so good that we'll loan it out and we can make more through investing than the cost to borrow the money. And so we will use debt to fix our debt problem. Now, the interesting thing to me about that is on the face of it, it's ridiculous, but it's really worse than that. It's negligent. It's amoral. Why? That is the exact same logic that a degenerate gambler uses. I just need one more line of credit. I just need one more advance. I'm going to win it back. And I'm going to do that 10 years into a bull cycle, which happens to be the longest bull cycle in U.S. history. I just scratched my head. Not only that, but we're gonna wisely invest this money, said the same people who drove the fiscal situation in Chicago for the last 80 years. They've created the shortfall. They've written the bad budgets. They've racked up the record debt. They've got record crime rates, record murder rate, all that. And oh, by the way, we're also going to wisely invest this and we're going to fix it by taking more debt onto the back of the taxpayers. Are you kidding me? You can't make this stuff up. Why do they think that? Why are they doing that? Because of bailouts. Amorality breeds amorality. Just like success breeds success, losing breeds losing. It's the same thing, right? The outcome does not care what we want it to be. The outcome is simply a function of the inputs. And no matter how many times we get burned, everybody keeps going back to the same trough, expecting to find a different meal. We're going to take on more debt to fix our record debt problem. God help us. I laughed, and the reason I laughed is because it's ridiculous. I think it's scary. I think it's shocking. I think it is incredibly irresponsible. I think it's a disaster waiting to happen, and it's not if, it's when. But there's that link. You can't separate consequences and reality and not expect there to be knock-on effects. We're going to fix our debt problem with more debt. We've been idiots. We've been morons. We've created the problems that currently exist, but we're going to wisely invest this money and make good decisions and fix it. Give me a break. I mean, like I said, you can't make it up. Anyway, we got a run, gone a little bit over. If any of this stuff interests you, if you want to know how we're protecting our clients against these inevitable outcomes that we're talking about and that hopefully you can see that are coming at us like a freight train, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can go to the radio show website at knowyourriskradio.com. It leads to Bulwark. You can sign up for our newsletter. You can get our free booklet. You can do all that. And also in the breaks, you might have noticed we've got some advertisements running with Brian Ott, 525 Advisors. He is who we send our clients to for long-term care advice. We focus strictly on the financial side of it. We're not a jack of all trades, master of none. We focus surgically on the investment side of it, and we work with Brian because he's the best in the business and knows it inside out. If you have questions about long-term care insurance, call 525 Advisors. You can look him up on the website, Brian Ott again. And then the other thing I want to tease is we're going to have kind of a risk workshop. We're working on this. You guys know how I'm endlessly fascinated about risk and how it relates to financial markets and all these kind of things. We're going to have a risk symposium, if you will, where we're going to get together with me and Brian Ott of 525 Advisors and possibly some other guys, maybe Steve Teitler of Best Mortgage. We're in the early stages of putting this on. And a guy just walked by with a parrot on his shoulder. Do you see that? Outside. He's like a pirate. We're going to put this on. Keep an ear out for that. Probably coming up sometime in October, maybe late September. We'll keep you informed. Anyway, we got to take a quick break. Thank you for listening. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Dory Monson, and I'm encouraging you to do what my wife and I did. We were told a few years ago by somebody we really trusted that one gaping hole in our planning was we didn't have long-term care insurance. You see, long-term care is going to affect nearly 3 out of 4 of us during our retirement years. In fact, it's probably the biggest risk we face, and not only can it wipe out everything we've worked hard for, it can tear our families apart due to the physical and emotional stress that comes with an extended healthcare situation. Now, the good news is a lot has changed, and there are now more options and new programs that'll not only protect your savings and your family, but they are guaranteed to pay you back if you never use them. So I want you to take the next step. Do what my wife and I did. Learn even more. Attend one of the free long-term care planning classes that Brian and Madeline put on. You'll be very glad you did. It's great information. Register today at 525longtermcare.com. That's 525longtermcare.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you so much for sticking with us. Because we go over, because we have a pension, or we, I have a pension to rant, which hopefully is mildly amusing, if not informative. Hopefully it's both. I know my kids and wife get a crack out of my rants. I have a tendency to get a little bit fired up, which is something I've noticed is kind of common with anybody that does radio. Like for those of you that listen to Todd Herman, let me reassure you something. It is not an act. Todd is that pumped all the time, if not more so. Dory picks his spots. But anyway, we're going to move on to expand a little bit on this market morality thing. But first, let me get to this observation, because some of you might sit here and hear this and go, yeah, well, no kidding, right? But one of the things I was thinking about was this Trump derangement syndrome. Because regardless of what you think of Trump, if you cannot admit that the reaction or the angst or the freaking out over Trump and the, I mean, there's just not a lot there, right? Get that you don't like his bedside manner. Truthfully, I'm not much of a fan of it either. I mean, there are things I think are amusing. Like he says it like it is to people that have spent their entire life trying to avoid hearing like it is, pretending they live in Wonderland. I find that amusing. But this interesting chasm we've got developed in our politics, which is, in my opinion, now stay with me, this is just a theory, but it struck me the other night that the political parties in this country are after two completely different things. The people that vote one way or the other are after two completely different things. And now, on the face of it, that seems logical, right? We're after free markets and capitalism and enhanced personal freedoms and protection, right? And they're after, you know, Candyland world, right? They want to make everything great. Everybody gets a trophy. Everybody gets money. Everybody's going to be rich. It's going to be great. Just vote for us. That doesn't matter. Blah, 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 blah. Right? So, but what is it? And what I've noticed is a lot of people care so much about the messenger and less about the message. And the reason why I underscore that is I was reading some works by some guys that I really respect, that I really think are intelligent, that are brilliant in the world of finance. And one of them said the other day, you know, I voted for Obama in 2008 and I was grossly disappointed. And that struck me as odd because I thought Obama was an admirable guy. I thought he was an incredible speaker, talented, accomplished a lot in terms of the world of academia and just being a successful human being. Obviously, he'd done nothing in the real world outside of academia, but I thought he was impressive as a human being. He seemed to have a great marriage with his wife, good father. You know, as a human being, I respected him. I couldn't stand his politics because I just know they don't work. And the evidence is all around us. On the flip side, you see what Trump is doing. And if all you did was look at the bills that he's passed and looked at the things he's advocated and taken the bravado or the boasting or the volume out of it and normalized it, he'd be somewhere to the left of JFK. Right? And yet he's a racist and we're freaking out. We're protesting it. Ah. But the two parties are looking for two distinct different things. They're confusing the messenger and the message. Those of us on the right tend to be more tied to rational thinking, more black and white. And we go, you know, we know all the horses have flaws. What we're looking for are the principles, the things you're enacting, and we'll deal with these other things. On the flip side of it, they're looking at, I want to elect a good person. Okay, that's great. Mr. Rogers is a great person. That doesn't qualify him to run the Federal Reserve, right? You know, I think another great person was a peanut farmer, Jimmy Carter. A lot of what he does, I personally admire. Do I want him making decisions? No. It's this inversion. It's this cult of personality that's taken over politics. We need a good person in there. Hey, I agree. But what's more important is that they can do the job and they know what works, right? So anyway, I went a little bit overboard on that. But if what we've talked about today, if what concerns us concerns you, if you don't see it being addressed in your portfolio, and I can almost guarantee you most of you don't, give us a call, 866-779-RISK, 866-779-RISK, because rest assured, people, there are tough times coming. You're going to need to think outside the box. If you want to generate good returns and minimize your risk, you can't do what's always been done before because what's being done has never been done before. We got to do things differently. So call us, go to the website, knowyourriskradio.com, get our free booklet, give us a call, set up a phone consultation, not just to get your business, but to show you guys there are easy ways to prepare. We've got umbrellas for the coming storm. We can lower costs. We can increase returns. We can build you a portfolio that's suitable for the things that we've never dealt with that we're dealing with today. So give us a call. Email us. You can also email us if you don't want to talk on the phone. Anyway, it's been a great week. Thank you so much for joining us. Hope to talk and meet with more of you soon. You've been listening to Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.